This is Talk To Me, the official podcast of MetalNexus.net. Your host, Joshua Toomey, bring you epic rants, anecdotes, and interviews with heavy hitters from hardcore
our new life begins!
To hair metal. This is Talk To Me.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Talk To Me, the official podcast of MetalNexus.net. Make sure you're heading over to Metal Nexus right now for all of your news, reviews, interviews, and the archives of this very podcast. Yes, the Talk To Me podcast. This is episode 184, and this week's guest is Jeremy Wagner of Broken Hope and also the author of Rabbit Heart. This being a post-Halloween episode, it's a horror novel. It's a romantic horror novel. You got to check out Rabbit Heart. Get it where you purchase your books, Amazon, online, Barnes & Noble's, your favorite bookstore. Make sure they have it and get yourself a copy. Jeremy was a great guest. We talked for a good 40 minutes about the new book, about his background in writing, also talk some Broken Hope, and we also talk about him purchasing Jeff Hanneman's guitar collection and what it means to him and what it meant to Jeff's wife to keep on Jeff's legacy. Also got a quick interview, got a quick about 10-minute interview at the end of the episode with Rat singer Stephen Piercy about his upcoming solo album. So make sure and stick around and check that out. We also play a new Stephen Piercy solo track called You Only Live Twice. And speaking of new, Slipknot released a new single on us today. I'm recording this on Halloween, October 31st. Slipknot hit us with a new track, so let's check it out right now.
You are listening to Talk To Me.
Ah!
right, guys, make sure to hit up the comment section on Facebook or hit me up on Twitter at TalkToMeTalk. Email the show, TalkToMeTalk@gmail.com. Let me know what you guys think of the new Slipknot. And as always, the Talk To Me podcast is brought to you by Good Company with Bowling. Yes, our good friend Scott Bowling down in Atlanta, Georgia, in his great YouTube channel and also web series on scottgoodcompany.com, or just search out Good Company with Bowling on YouTube, where you can check out his interviews with Head from Corn, members of Seven Dust, Stuck Mojo, Fozzy, Eddie Trunk, Jose Mangan, members of Islander. So many great episodes and so many great episodes coming up. So make sure and go check out scottgoodcompany.com or check him out on YouTube, Good Company with Bowling, and let him know that the Talk To Me podcast sent you. Let's get right into our episode this week, guys. Let's start off with a Broken Hope track. Let's talk to Jeremy Wagner. Check out some Slayer. Then we'll talk to Stephen Piercy. Check out one of his new tracks, and I will talk to you guys momentarily.
What's up, everybody? It's Tom Maxwell from Hell Yeah, and you're listening to Talk To Me.
We'll just jump right into it, man. We got Jeremy Wagner of Broken Hope on the line, legend in the death metal world and author of Rabbit Heart that was out October 3rd. So, man, Jeremy, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing really good, man. Thanks for having me today.
Obviously, we're here to talk about your book, and we'll talk a little bit about Broken Hope in a little bit, but I had a lot of questions surrounding. I know that you've written many books. When did you get the writing bug, and is this something you've been doing your whole life?
I got the writing bug at age 5, actually. And so I've been writing fiction for a long time. The first thing I ever wrote was a story adaptation of a monster movie that I saw on TV. And that was it for me. I was always into horror and creepy stuff and everything. And as a little kid, Halloween was my favorite holiday, and as a big kid now, I still love Halloween. But I started really young writing, and my maternal grandmother gave me this hardcover book that had blank pages, blank line pages in it to write whatever I wanted. So I got that. I started writing my first stories in there. I still have that actually to this day. And from there, as I grew older, I got more serious about writing, and I continued to write short stories and dark poetry. And eventually I formed a band, Broken Hope, which this year is our 30th anniversary. I formed the band in 1988 as a teenager. Mm-hmm. And back when Broken Hope formed and throughout the entire existence of the band, I've been the chief lyricist. So I've written all the lyrics for Broken Hope. So my passion for writing horror and fiction and telling stories wove its way into Broken Hope that way. And then over the years, aside from Broken Hope and lyrics, with the short story writing, I started selling short stories to magazines and book collections, you know, like short story collections and anthologies and stuff. And, it just grew from there. And then like in the 90s, I was like, you know, I really want to try tackling writing a novel. So I wrote my first novel, like in the 90s, it was never published. I always tell people my first novel was sort of like my band's first demo tape. I thought it was really great, but it actually wasn't.
Right.
And I had a lot more to learn and a lot more to work on. And, I put that on a shelf, and I just continued to write more novels. And eventually, I got a book deal, and my first real novel came out in 2011, and that was The Armageddon Court. And then this story, this novel, the new one we're talking about today, Rabbit Heart, that actually was this novel started back when The Armageddon Court was coming out. And it was in the works for a while, but I had other projects to do. I had Broken Hope tours, albums to do. And when I say other projects, I specifically mean other book projects and writing projects that I was doing that kind of put Rabbit Heart to the side. So when I came back to it a couple years ago, I finished it up and then started revising it and editing and all that good stuff. And eventually got it to the point where I thought it was good enough to start shopping around. I was looking for a new book deal this past year. So I got really lucky with signing a new deal with this Riverdale Avenue Books. And they're afraid, quote unquote, of afraid horror imprint. So that worked out great. And here we are. The new book is out. And I'm just thrilled about that. And I just I've been talking about zombies and horror and all this stuff I like this whole week. So I'm having a blast.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's a perfect month for all that, too.
It is.
The one thing I read the synopsis of the book. I read the first few pages of the book. That's what I've obviously got to. That's my attention span or something. But obviously, you know, zombie apocalypse is maybe not the most original idea, but your take on it, I think, is a pretty neat one. The kind of the rabies, the Cujos, I guess you called them, you know, that side of it, and the, you know, kind of the love story behind it, you know, with the main characters, you know, the man of her dreams kind of coming down with this and trying to kind of keep him from the Marine husband or the Marine father, things like that. Like it's a very, you know, I'm honestly looking forward to sitting down and actually diving into the entire thing. But from what I can tell, man, what a cool concept. And obviously with the world that we live in today, you know, my mind is already going to, you know, Netflix or a movie adaptation.
Yeah, I'd like. Well, first off, I'm glad you're going to dive into it, and a couple of points that you made definitely were at the forefront of my thoughts going into this book. Really specifically to you know, the zombie genre, when I first started writing Rabbit Heart, it was, gosh, I think. Might have been before Walking Dead was even on TV.
Right.
I'd written a short story for a zombie anthology. So this would have been like 2009, something like that, 2010, somewhere in there. And I wrote this short story, sold it to a publisher for a zombie short story anthology. And I got the idea for Rabbit Heart right around that same time. I was like, you know, it's always like, what if? What if this character, in this case, Rhonda Driscoll is the main character. And I had always wanted to write about a strong female protagonist. Mm-hmm. So that's also where it started. So as I mentioned, I started writing Rabbit Heart, and then my novel, The Armageddon Chord, came out, and I was really focused on promoting that. Broken Hope came back into my life. We started touring, and I've been doing that heavy since, well, the last 6 years, really. And then, again, writing other projects. And I'll tell you, when I revisited Rabbit Heart, like the first draft a couple of years back, to really focus on it, those were my thoughts, Josh. Like, you know, the friggin' world right now is so saturated with zombie stuff, whether mm-hmm. it's TV series, movies, comic books. Every classic zombie horror movie's been remade like 3 times. Zombie toys, all that stuff. And I was like thinking, like, shit, are people gonna even look at this, you know, now? You know, they're gonna yawn and or let's move on to the next, you know, hip thing in horror, you know. Mm-hmm. Zombies have been really pushed to the to the max, you know. And like, that's like with the vampire genre, you know, some years back too, when True Blood was on TV. I mean, it was vampires everywhere. So to that end, though, I still wanted to tell the story, and I have a passion for the undead. Let me be clear, I'm not a necrophiliac. I have a passion for the undead. For example, I'm such a huge fan of George Romero, mm-hmm. whom he's one of the people as well that this book is dedicated to. You know, Night of the Living Dead, which, by the way, just celebrated 50 years this week.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. And, you know, Day of the Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, on and on. I just love those movies. Zombies, since I was in grade school, have also been the number one monster that has given me nightmares, honest to God, if I think about a recurring thing. And I would have dreams, Josh, now that I think about it, talking to you, I didn't mention this in any interview, about zombie dreams. I've had zombie dreams for decades, and it's always the same thing. I'm on a military base surrounded by fences and soldiers, just like Rhonda Driscoll in Rabbit Heart is. So I think maybe subconsciously, you know, from these nightmares I had, I wove that into the story. But more important, I wanted to give, you know, this pandemic an original stamp, hence the necro rabies virus. And I really did research, like, great book by Richard Preston, The Hot Zone. A lot of people will know that book because it's about the Ebola virus. And it is completely horrifying and 100% accurate and truthful. And it's just, that book had a profound effect on me. So I revisited that book just to get an idea of how, you know, a super horrific virus could spread and what it could do. And then the rabies thing, I did a lot of research on rabies, just kind of mashed it all together. Of course, this whole outbreak, this will be cliche, is the government's fault, but it had to start somewhere. So I threw that in. But the story, aside from the world being like, you know, full of these Cujos, and it's 6 months after all this stuff happened, the story's a lot deeper. I really wanted to, you know, I'd not go just for the jugular and be over the top, you know, with horror, terror, and gore, which those elements are definitely in the book. But I wanted to have a more emotional connection with the reader and the characters in the story. So when you get into Rhonda Driscoll's head, the main character, you're really discovering this young woman who's 21 has been traumatized by the outbreak of the necrorabies virus that has cost her her mother's life, her sister's life, and her fiance, who she thought was dead, later discovers is not dead, but is quote unquote cujified or zombified, if you will. And so she's got a lot of like really PTSD going on. And that's what I wanted to get across to the reader, is getting in her head. Because when you see a horror movie like any of the ones that were mentioned by George Romero, which I love, typically in a movie, though, you don't get that emotional connection. A lot of stuff's on the surface, and it's survival horror, and a lot of stuff plays out where characters in a movie are already seem like they're super strong, they're mentally strong, and they do whatever it takes to kick ass and, you know, survive and all that stuff. I wanted it to be more realistic and have Rhonda Driscoll have typical human flaws like we all do. And again, going back to that PTSD and trauma, she's not exactly making the best decisions. For example, and it's hard for her, it'd be hard for anyone, like putting a beloved pet down or something, to kill her zombified fiance she finds. She can see he's not the same Brad, that's his name, that she fell in love with. He's got a virus that's ruined his body and brain, and he's, turned into a monster, but she can't bring herself to kill him. So what she thinks she'll do is kidnap him, get him away from the Marine base where her father, the Marine colonel, and everyone else wants to kill this guy, and takes a Humvee and plans to go to Florida from North Carolina, thinking she'll live happily ever after in sunny Florida. And that's where the story really takes off, because the road trip she goes on is just full of horrors. It's bleak, dark. Along the way, though, too, it's not all full out terror and badness, because she does. I won't give it a spoiler away, but she does find something that brings joy to her life and gives her even more purpose along the way. So a lot happens to her on that road trip, and basically the reader's right there in the front seat with her as she's experiencing all this stuff. So again, I really, on the zombie front, definitely tried to tell a totally original and fresh zombie themed story, but also I wanted to go way deeper with the story, with the characters and everything else in there, and, you know, tie it all together in a nice little package we call Rabbit Heart.
Very cool, man. Like we said, it came out October 3rd, so it's available now. What's the best place for people to find it?
You can get it at pretty much any favorite bookstore that you might have out there carries it. And if they don't have it in store, they can order it. Also, Amazon, which is a lot of people's favorite choice. Mm-hmm. I can honestly say Amazon's probably got the best prices, especially if you're a Prime member and stuff too. You probably get free shipping and get it really fast. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, IndieBound, every bookseller, and also whatever your flavor is as far as editions are also available. So there's ebook, digital, paperback, hardcover. And within the next month, there will be an audiobook for the first time. I've never had an audiobook before. There will be an audiobook for Rabbit Heart, and that should be available through Audible and other sources.
That's very cool. Do you do any kind of book signings? Do you take these books out with you on the road when Broken Hope goes on tour? Do you go to, like, the horror conventions, things like that?
You know, I used to I used to not take books on tour with Broken Hope, and then fans would ask, do you have any of your books? So I would start bringing books here and there to Broken Hope shows, and I'm always delighted to see, you know, death metal fans who love to read. I love that. So I've done that before. With Rabbit Heart, I'm actually starting to get book signings confirmed. So like in at the end of October, I'm going to be doing a signing in Chicago at a store called Bucket of Blood Books and Records, which great name for
a
bookstore.
Yeah, it's a great name.
And then another bookstore that I absolutely love, and it's one of the greatest horror and dark fiction and fantasy bookstores out there. It's called Dark Delicacies.
Okay.
And that's out in the Burbank, Los Angeles area. And I'm going to be out there, I think it's right around Saturday, October 10th. And as far as I know, I'm supposed to be doing that along with some other authors. Like, if anyone knows Steve Niles, he's the guy who, he writes a lot of graphic novels and stuff, but he's also the guy who created that movie, that vampire movie, 30 Days of Night.
Okay.
If you've ever seen that. So, I love that movie. Cool guy. So I'm supposed to be, I think, appearing with him. And then I'm just waiting for more appearances to come my way. But I definitely, I love doing book signings, and I also love doing book readings. You know, like I usually read a chapter out of one of my books, and it's kind of like performing in Broken Hope, just a little bit different, you know?
Well, that's actually my next kind of questioning was for the kind of the bridge between being an author and being in a band. You know, what do you find is maybe the most similar in the two worlds? And then, you know, maybe what's the most different between being in the book world and the music world?
The similarities, there's many of them. I'll tell you this. So writing a book, I kind of liken it to writing an album. You know, you put a lot of your heart and blood, sweat and tears and your soul into making an album. It's a lot of work. Writing all the music and all the lyrics, in my case, both. And writing a novel, you know, same thing. You pour your heart and soul and sweat, tears and blood, everything into that novel, and it doesn't happen overnight, and you get it done. And then if you're shopping your wares, like, and you're in a band, right? So you want to get a record deal, and you want to get a booking agent so you can tour and all that good stuff. That's like with being an author trying to get a book deal, you know, and you need a literary agent to get a book deal. So you want to get a literary agent, you want the book deal. Very similar things. And in both worlds, you better be able to take rejection, because right. You get a lot of rejection. And then, you know, so, and that's a lot of similarities there. The publishing business and the record business have those similarities. And then where it's different is really being an author is a solitary thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like with Rabbit Heart, I'm doing all the interviews on my own. I do all the work alone. It's my baby. Whereas being in Broken Hope in a band, I've got so many people I got to answer to. So I have four other band members, you know, who are part of Broken Hope. And then, you know, there's management, and then there's record label people and publicists and booking agents and on and on. And so like being a Broken Hope, I answer to 20 people, and being a Jeremy Wagner, the novelist, is great, because I really don't have to deal with anyone else except for, you know, my publisher and a couple of publicists, and it's really cool. So I probably sound like I love writing more than Broken Hope. It does have its bonuses. I will say that. I really do love being a novelist. And honestly, Josh, I've been writing full time since really 2011, despite all the, you know, being a busybody with Broken Hope. I'm always writing, usually every day. I've got three new books that are already done, which will hopefully be all coming out next year in 2019. And, you know, it's a huge passion of mine. And Broken Hope, writing music, being a death metal guitarist, is another passion of mine. But that's not so much a career and, you know, not something I'd make a living on or anything. And at this point, after doing Broken Hope for 30 years, I'd like to pick and choose my battles, you know, when it comes to the band. So, like, I see Broken Hope doing more, like, infrequent festival appearances, you know, that type of thing. We just got off a tour in August, and it was a great run, but the touring thing just, it takes too much time away from, you know, things I like to do, like being with my family and, you know, sitting down and writing, which, as you know, is what I like to do all the time. And, again, you can't make a living at it. So I'd rather not lose money. I'd rather do things and make them special with Broken Hope and, you know, do that on the side and just continue churning out novels on a regular basis right now.
Is writing something you can do while you tour? Are you able to kind of, even if you're riding in a bus or on a plane or in a van, I mean, is there something, are you able to just kind of zone out and write, or do you need like your special spot at home?
I do try and write on the road. It is a little bit harder just because of the schedule. So, you know, typically on tour, when you wake up on the bus, you're in the city you're going to play. You roll out of the bus, then sometime in the afternoon, you load into the venue, all the gear, merchandise, you get stuff set up. You're there for hours getting sound checks and everything going. So, and then by the time you get that done, the doors are open, the show is starting. If I can disappear somewhere quiet and maybe write something, I try. You know, then it's showtime, you load out, then it's 3 a.m. Then you're rolling down the road, and a lot of times I feel creatively spent. So typically, as long as that bus is parked somewhere the next day when I wake up, if I can get up early enough, then I try to go somewhere quiet and do a little writing. I typically, when I write a novel, I'm always, you know, on my MacBook anyway, but I'll also, if I got a real awesome idea and I don't have, you know, Microsoft Word to use on a computer, I'll start writing stuff longhand, like the old fashioned way, in a spiral notebook. And then once I get to a computer or back home, I just start, you know, transferring the stuff I wrote by hand into the story. Yeah. But ideally, you know, being in my office and surrounded by my books and just getting my schedule, my zone, that's always, you know, the best. I will say this, though, even if I can't write every day on tour, what's really important to me is reading every day. And I always make sure that I've got a really good book with me anywhere I go in the world at all times. I definitely love reading. And reading is a lot easier to get done than writing, because I can read when people are around and talking or playing music. I seem to do that okay. Writing with, when a lot of people are around and blasting and drinking or whatever on the bus and stuff, is a total distraction. I can't quite get into the zone to write. It's a funny thing for me, reading versus writing, but reading's super hella important. And, I like to do that every day too. And that's a lot easier for me when I'm traveling.
Well, cool, man. As we wrap this up, I did have one outside the box question here, but it did come out a couple of years ago that you bought a bunch of Jeff Hanneman's guitars after he had passed. What was the, you know, why did you feel the need to do that? And then what have you done with those guitars?
Well, it was the right place, right time for me. And to be clear, I bought them just because I really worship Jeff Hanneman's body of work as a guitarist and as a lyricist. He's probably, you know, single-handedly the source of why I wanted to be more of an extreme metal guitar player than anything. I picked up an electric guitar when I was a teenager, you know, like 1983, 84. I was into heavy metal, and then 84, Metallica came out with Ride the Lightning, and it blew me away so much, it changed my life. And I'm like, I want to do that. I never heard anything like that in those guitars. Oh, what is that? And so I got an electric guitar, and I just kept getting into more and more thrash metal stuff. And then, and I had been listening to Slayer, and I thought they were good, right? But when Rain and Blood came out, then I just snapped to attention. Like, these guys, these guys aren't just good. They're on a whole nother epic level. And when I learned, you know, more about Jeff Hanneman, again, I'm like 16 year old or whatever, I'm like, wow, this guy is the dude writing all my favorite Slayer songs, and he's writing all these lyrics to my favorite Slayer songs. And I'm like, I want to do that. I want to, because as you know, I was a writer, and I'm like, I want to write lyrics too when I form a band. And then I did. So fast forward, Jeff Hanneman, hero to me, huge source of inspiration, someone I totally admire, passes away, unfortunately, and some time goes by, and then his widow is going to start selling his guitars and put them through auction. Now, came to my attention she was going to do this. One, there was a press release about it, but two, she was having ESP guitars facilitate the sale of the guitars. They were going to go up for auction. I have a really strong relationship. Also going on 30 years since I was, you know, a teenager with ESP guitars, and specifically the president of ESP, Matt Massingdaro. He's a really good friend of mine. I found out ESP was helping her out. This is Jeff's widow. And I talked to them, before these go to auction, could I possibly throw my hat in the ring and purchase these guitars and whatnot? So Matt put me in touch with Catherine Hanneman, Jeff's widow. We started talking, created a dialogue, and at the time hit it off really well. And next thing I know, I was at the Hanneman house where Jeff used to live and with his wife. And so I bought a bunch of his guitars and a whole bunch of other parts of his estate. And the reason why I did this, to answer that question of yours, is again, the dude is Jeff Hanneman is responsible for me. I blame him for being here as Broken Hope's guitarist, man, and lyricist. He really was a catalyst. And I've had a lot of bands who've inspired me, believe me. I mean, I told you, Metallica, Ride the Lightning, single-handedly put an electric guitar in my hand. Jeff Hanneman made me want to play faster and meaner and write awesome lyrics. And then as time went on, bands like Def, Morbid Angel, Carcass, you know, on and on, dude, like all played a role in influencing me as a guitar player in my teen years and early 20s. So there's a lot of players out there that I worship, but Jeff Hanneman above all meant more to me. So to that end, to answer your question, because I was able to afford all these guitars and other pieces of his estate, it was important to me. One, I was like, fuck, I don't want anybody else to have these guitars spread out around the world. I hate to go to like a Hard Rock Hotel in Orlando and see Jeff Hanneman guitar behind a case sitting there. I was like, because I want to play these guitars. I want to also keep Jeff's legacy alive. And I'm able to do that. It's a very, very, very unique situation to be in. And, but I'm glad I'm able to do it because I truly honor Jeff Hanneman. I do carry on his legacy. The last Broken Hope album was written and recorded with two of Jeff's classic guitars. Our album is dedicated to the spirit and memory of Jeff Hanneman. And, you know, I got like this, it's private right now. It's the Hanneman Museum. I mean, it's a legit museum. And I've shared it with like Metal Hammer magazine before, and I'm sure I'll do some more stuff, like maybe, you know, like an exclusive video at some point of it. And maybe someday when I have the wherewithal and the funds or something, I'll, you know, have a friggin' Wagner World Public Museum and all this shit will be on display. But another thing, Josh, I'll share this with you. Jeff Hanneman's widow also, you know, she really had to, I had to be vetted to get all this stuff. Cause one thing that was important to her was, she wanted Jeff's legacy to be respected and continued. Sure, she was going to auction these guitars, but you know, anyone that was going to buy them outside of me was going to have to jump through the same hoops. Cause she kept stressing to me, Jeff would not want these guitars to be on display, you know, at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, at a Hard Rock Casino. Jeff would want these guitars to be played and loved because he loved those guitars. He loved being a guitar player. And, you know, he wasn't into trophies. He was into these guitars are made to be played and write sick riffs on or whatever. And I said, well, shit, that's easy for me because I love writing sick riffs. I love Jeff Hanneman. And I will do that. And you know what? I kept my goddamn word. Used him to record the new Broken Hope album. Two of them, that is. And dedicated the album to him. And I'm still here, man, carrying on Jeff Hanneman's legacy, his spirit, and honoring him in a huge way. So there's the story, bro.
Well, that's cool, man. Yeah, I'm glad they went to a fan and not to, like you said, to a Hard Rock Cafe or whatnot. Well, let's finish this off with, like we said, Rabbit Heart is out now. Make sure you get it at all of your fine bookstores. And we started out the episode with the Broken Hope song, so let's finish it out with one of your favorite Slayer tunes.
Okay, if you would, please play, if you can do this back-to-back.
Okay.
Play Altar of Sacrifice into Jesus Saves. Altar of Sacrifice is probably my favorite Slayer song of all time. And all right, then going into Jesus Saves is so heavy, dude. So if you would do that right now, if you could see me, I am saluting you.
I will absolutely do that. And cool, well, Jeremy Wagner, man, it's been a pleasure and an honor to talk to you, and been listening to you since the early 90s. So, man, good luck with everything, and thanks for taking the time today.
Josh, thank you for the kind words. Thank you for an awesome interview, for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. And my best to you, bro, and all your listeners.
This is Dave Lombardo, and you're listening to Talk to Me.
The altar of death. I preach the waiting dagger in hand, spilling the pure virgin blood. They can slaughter.
All right, guys, we got Stephen Piercy on the line. New album, View to a Thrill, out November 9th on Frontiers Records. Stephen, how you doing tonight, bud?
Very well. Just got off the road doing some ranch shows. I'm doing promotion for View to a Thrill. It comes out in a couple weeks. Looking forward to it, and I'll take it from there.
Cool, cool. And the new album's out on Frontiers Records, man. How do you enjoy your working relationship with Nick Teeter and the guys over there?
It's been good, you know. Got these cool records in the bag there, and I'm just anxiously awaiting Due to a Thrill. Eric, the lead guitar player, co-writer of the songs, him and I put a lot of time into these songs, and it's hard. You know, it's what we can do and what we can give. You know, you do the best you can, and that's it.
Yeah, Eric Ferrantino's on this, man. He definitely shows out, and the new album's very, you know, Rat-esque. Do you think about that when you're writing solo stuff, trying to not stray too far from the path, or do you, and keep the Rat fans in mind when you're doing the solo stuff?
No, when I do solo material, I can get into anything. Even songs I write, you know, it could sound like a punk song, it could sound like a ballad, blues, this, that, keyboards, whatever. We try anything, you know. Rat music is a different entity. You know, actually, we're going to be writing a couple new songs for next year's tour, Juan and I. But as far as the solo stuff, you know, Eric brings me music, or I bring music, we get together, and we go over it with Matt, our producer guy, co-producer guy, and you know, we make sure we, you know, cross the T's, dot the I's, and do the best we can.
Now, with this being under your personal name, do you take it a little bit more to heart, you know, when you see album sales and whatnot, you know, with Rat? Even live and attendance wise and things like that with Rat, you know, that's a big entity, you know, and but when it's a sure. Stephen Piercy show, you know, that's Rat diehards and fans of you. So are you a little bit more conscious of Stephen Piercy fans?
Well, of course it's more personal, and the funny thing is I've sold them right than Rat. You know, I've done Arcane and my other records and what I release. I mean, all my records are released under my own Top Fuel Records.
Right.
So I find it ironic that they're two different things, you know, and we take, yeah, I spend a lot more time on my soul. I mean, if it has to be my solo record, I make sure that, you know, we try everything, stuff that I wouldn't even address to Rat. I wouldn't even bring to the table, and not even now, because I know it's not part of our, you know, our system. I'm always going to sound like me.
Right.
No matter what I sing. So that's that, you know, that's, you know, doesn't bother me at all. I think it's appreciative. But with this record, due to it, you know, it's way different than Smash. Smash was very diverse, very, you know, up, down. It took on all entities, you know, as far as verses and subject and music. View to a Thrill is more of a record written for, you know, a Bond movie, you know.
Right.
And there's a lot of nuances there, except if you talk like Malibu or Not Killing Me, which I've got to say on the song Not Killing Me, I had the opportunity to have Robbie Krieger from Doors doing the guitar for solo.
Oh, cool.
And it's amazing. And I ran into him and asked him if he would want to play a solo, and he said, sure. And I was just blown away at what he did. You know, sounds amazing.
Yeah, and the one song that jumped out to me so far on the album is Sky Falling. I really enjoy the, you know, the vocal stuff you guys did, I believe, on the choruses and stuff. It's definitely, you know, catchy as hell. And
oh, you have the whole record?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, okay.
So how do you enjoy touring these days with, you know, with Rat and your solo stuff, you know, maybe doing a little bit more spot shows, weekend shows here and there, rather than, you know, going out for 9 months at a time and just slaving away in a bus?
Yeah, well, I mean, even we just slaved away at the last week and a half in a bus, which is great for the Rat shows. That's, like I say, they're two different things.
Yeah.
They're two different entities. And, you know, the new Rat right now with the two new guitar players and drummer, you know, Chris Saunders, Jordan, Zip, Pete Holmes, Ron, and myself, it's a whole new thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like early Rat, you know. Solo stuff is it's we don't know what's going to happen.
Was there ever talk of you taking some of the guys from your solo band and putting them in Rat when the exodus happened with Rat?
There was, yeah, but they're two different things, and I don't want one to disturb the other.
Right.
You know, that's the bigger dog, but, you know, in the end, my solo stuff is, I'm going to always do, you know. I can't say that, you know, Rat's going to be touring forever, because I sure as hell don't want to go forever. I have the same interests, you know, the things to do. You know, I want to write music for movies and TV and get my race cars. And just a lot of other things to do. But Rat is going to be our primary next year. And we'll still promote Meets with Thrill, do shows 100%. We have shows booked already, a few.
You know, you brought up Arcade a little while ago. Is there any plans of ever resurrecting that and getting Fred Corey out, getting him out of the out of the TV studios and stuff?
That would be great. I mean, you know, his name to play for Rat. Freddie's cool. He's like a little brother, but I don't think Arcade will get out there again. That was a great band. That was an amazing band.
Yeah, it was definitely a great band. Maybe timing might have been a little bit off on that with the rise of you know, grunge and everything that came out at the time, but you know, you and Fred together is always going to be a good thing.
Yeah, it did well for, you know, what it was at that time, so we're happy about that, you know.
Very nice. And like we said, View to a Thrill has actually got some vinyl options, a few different vinyl options coming out. Are you surprised that vinyl's kind of made this resurgence?
No, not at all, because, you know, even my daughter collects stuff, and it's just, some of these, you know, people are getting a clue that that's where the real sounds came from. It came from, you know, 2-track to 8-track, and you know, 4-track, you know, you put in your car, cassette, you know, but there's nothing like vinyl or tape,
mm-hmm.
you know, nothing like it. It's digital, it's just, you know, when it makes it small, this you need to do with just make it louder, story or whatever, but it's not as true as you would ever get with any kind of, I don't know what it is, 8-track, 2-track, you know, cassette, but tape is way different.
And like we said a minute ago, the new album, once again, View to Thrill, out November 9th on Frontiers Records. Did you say that you had solo tour plans, or you said Rat's going to kind of be the focus next year?
The Rat was the focus worldwide, but I will definitely be promoting Huge Thrill, where it's probably the best solo record I've done. You know, it's number 5, and I'll always make records, you know. I'll always make solo records, do what I do. There's too much music, you know, too much. You know, so many ideas that are great to not at least try to get out of them. And I can do it because I created my own label in 95 to do what I want to do. And I license my music to get out, you know.
All right, cool, Steven. Well, thanks, man, for the time today. And we're going to end this off with You Only Live Twice. Maybe give a little story behind the song, and they'll play us out.
Well, it's to much a nuance to, you know, my infatuation or appreciation for Bond. It's, you know, when I think we can give twice, and it just turned into something really cool. And really don't know how to explain it because the lyrics are in front of me. It's been a bit, but, you know,
right.
It's the song. We love the song. It's one of our favorite songs on the record.
All right, Stephen, man. Well, thank you so much for the time today, and good luck with the new album.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, take care.
What's up, everybody? This is Rob from the band Nonpoint, and this is my weekly segment here, Rob's Pick from the Kit. I apologize. There's been a couple of weeks where I haven't been able to do this. I got home from tour. I've been very, very busy with the family, but here I am back again, and now that I'm going to be leaving on tour, I'll be able to do this every week. We are leaving next week to start our tour with POD and Islander, which starts November 15th in Los Angeles, California at the world-famous Whiskey A Go-Go. Also, we have three shows on the way there. We're playing at Aftershock Live in Kansas City, Kansas, which is Merriam, Kansas, actually, or Merriam, not sure exactly how you pronounce it. November 10th, we're in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma at 89th Street, and November 11th, we are at the Black Sheep in Colorado Springs. All these shows are with Islander and locals that were picked by the promoter. These will be headline shows to get us to California. Then we have a few days to get out there. A few days off in Vegas, which will be interesting since I don't drink or gamble. I don't know what to do. So anyway, yeah, we start this tour with POD's Cross Country. We're going to be hitting Los Angeles, Anaheim, San Diego, Tyler, Texas, Tempe, Arizona, Houston, Dallas, Lincoln, Nebraska, Joliet, Illinois, Portland, Maine, Flint, Michigan, Traverse City, Michigan, Racine, Wisconsin, where else we're going? Green Bay, Wisconsin, Greenville, North Carolina, Destin, Florida, Lynchburg, Virginia, New York City, Providence, Rhode Island. And I think that's it. If I'm missing something, I deeply apologize, but get your tickets. They're going really quick. And yeah, we'll see you at the shows. Nonpoint.com for all ticket info and nonpointstore.com for all VIP. And this week's pick from the kit, I'm going to pick Machine Head, the song 10 Ton Hammer. If anybody knows me, knows and how much Machine Head has played a role in my life. Been a fan since 1994, since Burn My Eyes. I've known Rob pretty much since around that time. And I've known Phil and Dave for about, I don't know, 15 years each. And I'm very excited. I got to see them last weekend or the week before last on the farewell tour of this era of Machine Head. They are not breaking up. Rob Flynn has stated it. It's not the end of Machine Head, just the end of this era. And the song 10 Ton Hammer is probably possibly one of my favorite Machine Head songs ever. That riff is probably one of the top five riffs ever written. And yeah, Machine Head has been a very, very important band in my life. I've got to see them on the Burn My Eyes tour, headlining over Stuck Mojo. Then I saw them open for Slayer and Biohazard during that tour. And the show at Stuck Mojo actually was around the end of the cycle, and where they played Frontlines from that record. So anyway, without further ado, here is Machine Head with 10 Ton Hammer. Fuck yeah.
Hey, this is Rob Flynn from Machine Head, and you're listening to Talk To Me.
All right. Huge thank you to Jeremy Wagner of Broken Hope for coming on the show. Always a huge honor to have Stephen Piercy of Rat and his solo career on the show. Sorry about the audio on the Stephen Piercy interview. That's why it was cut a little bit short. Those guys, those 80s guys, him and George Lynch, man, they need to learn how to get a new cell phone or get a landline in the 20th century, 21st century, wherever the hell we are. They're stuck in the 20th century. This is the 21st century. But as always, huge to have guys like Stephen Piercy and Jeremy Wagner on the podcast. Upcoming episodes with Mark Tremonti, John Deddy, Monty Pittman, and so much more coming up. So it's going to be a lot of fun, guys. So until next Thursday, I am Joshua Toomey, and this has been the Talk Toomey Podcast.